listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. Okay, the libertarians have been saying for a long, long time, gee, if we just got rid of government, everything would be wonderful. But if you just get rid of government, what do you have? Big corporations running everything. I mean, somebody's going to step into that space, right? And in fact, Ronald Reagan did a great job of getting rid of government with regard to breaking up big companies and keeping small companies competitive with each other in 82 and 83 when he stopped enforcing the Sherman Act. And the result was that just a few years after Jimmy Carter had finally broken up AT&T into a whole bunch of small companies, and you had a lot of small carriers competing with each other, there was this massive consolidation going on, particularly in telecom. And it's getting worse, and both with telecom and now with the internet. And what's particularly interesting is back in 97, Louise and I moved to Vermont, and I wanted to get a cell phone. I'd had a cell phone down in Atlanta that I started out with a brick phone and then went to a phone that got hot and cooked my hand, and you know, the old analog phones. And when I moved to Vermont, we bought a digital phone. But there was only one cell phone provider in the state at that time. And their service was pretty spotty, and we kept getting lousy reception and roaming charges. And I wasn't roaming. I wasn't going anywhere. And they were hitting me with $200-$400 a month in roaming charges. And so I tried to call their number to cancel their service. And when you pick the option from the menu, push 7 if you intend to cancel. You push 7, and you're put on hold for like an hour. And you give up. And I tried saying, yes, I want new service. And I'd get a person who says, you know, immediately you get a person, right? How can I help you? I want to cancel. Oh, I'm sorry. You've got it. Let me transfer you to that department. Boom, you're back listening to the music for an hour. Finally, after several hours, I got a person who said, okay, we'll cancel you. And then they didn't cancel me. In fact, actually, I talked to two different people who said that they would cancel me, and they didn't cancel me. And the next month I got a bill, the next month I got a bill. And Louise and I went out in our backyard and we did a ritual. We dug a hole and we buried the cell phone, which I realize is, you know, disposing of toxic waste illegally and improperly. My apologies. I wasn't thinking in those terms at the time. And started ignoring the bills. And finally they stopped billing me after it reached like $900. After 7-8 months, you know, they got it, or my contract expired, one or the other. And we just ignored the bills. They turned them over for collection. We told the collection agencies to screw off. It probably damaged my credit rating. At that point in my life, I didn't care. We had retired. We were living on you know, money that we had stashed in the bank, and I had no need for credit. And frankly, haven't much ever since then. So, you know, which is a luxury that 99.9% of Americans don't have. So I could just say, screw you to the cell phone company. And they probably wrote it off, you know, and got a tax write-off for it. So anyhow, that's my story. I think we all have stories. And here's the frustrating thing. If this was a government bureaucracy, so if I was having problems with the Veterans Administration and Social Security, I could call my senator's office, who at that time was, I had two senators. It was Jim Jeffords and Pat Leahy. And now it's Pat Leahy and Bernie Sanders. Or I could have called my congressman, who at that time was Bernie Sanders. And they would actually give hell to that agency on behalf of me. But if I had gone to Verizon's headquarters and stood out in front with a sign, they could have me arrested for trespassing. They felt quite comfortable. As I recall, it was Verizon. It may not have been. Louise and I were trying to remember this morning exactly what company was that. Because it was back. It was just in the post-reconsolidation era. And this was just before Virgin came out with their no contract, you know, $20 a month or whatever it was, cell phones, which is what I eventually ended up with for the next like 4 or 5 years until the iPhones came out. But anyhow, the net of this, Ryan Block tried to cancel his service with Comcast, which owns like, you know, just about half the internet market in the United States and wants to get bigger. Ryan Block tried this. He's a tech guy. You were going to print that out? I don't have it. Okay. He's a gadget. Oh, a tech and gadget guy for AOL. Tech EN Gadget. Okay, all right. So anyhow, this is a guy who knows what he's talking about, and he just got sick and tired of it and recorded the call. Here is Ryan Block trying to cancel his Comcast service.
Okay, we'd like to disconnect. We'd like to disconnect, please.
Okay, so why is it that you don't want the faster speed? Help me understand why you don't want faster internet.
Help me understand why you can't just disconnect us.
Because my job is to have a conversation with you about keeping your service, about finding out why it is that you're looking to cancel the service.
I don't understand.
Talk to me, you can definitely go into the Comcast store and disconnect your service there. Okay.
You're just asking to
kill two birds with one stone. You got to return that cable card to the store anyways.
We're actually going to just mail the cable card in, but if you can just please cancel our service, that would be great. That is all we want.
We're actually not able to return a cable card by mail.
Then I will send someone like a TaskRabbit to go return the cable card for us. I don't personally intend to go return the cable card. That's why we're probably not going to be canceling in store. So that's why I need you to cancel by phone. So can you cancel us by phone? But the answer is yes, correct?
I mean, it sounds like you don't want to go over this information with me. I mean, if you're not wanting to go over that information, okay, then that's the easiest way to get your account disconnected.
I am declining to state why we are leaving Comcast because I don't owe you an explanation. So if you can please proceed to the next question. If you have to fill out your form, that's fine. Please proceed to the next question, and we'll attempt to answer that.
It continues like this, and you know, with this guy going, but you know, no, we've got the best service in the world. Why would you want to go away from us? We're the big guys on the block. We got, you know, and it continues on and on, and for 8 long minutes, and this isn't the entire conversation, and. The amazing thing about this is that it's not amazing. I'm guessing that everybody in America has had an experience like this, trying to get a hold of their credit card company, trying to get a hold of their bank, trying to get a hold of their phone company. You know, Lily Tomlin used to make jokes back in the 60s and 70s about AT&T about this. It was one of the things that led Richard Nixon to initiate the proceedings to break up AT&T that were completed during the Carter administration. This is what happens when you have giant monopolies. Here's a little more of Ryan Block trying to cancel.
Okay, the way that you can help me is by disconnecting our service. That's how you can help me.
How is that helping you, though?
Because that's what I want. That's what I want.
Okay, so why is that what you want?
But see, because that's the way that I have concluded, and I don't know this for a fact, although I used to run forums for CompuServe. Okay, and we made a fair amount of money back in the 80s from around 81 or 82 until the mid 90s. I ran over 20 forums on CompuServe, international trade, desktop publishing, PC support, Mac support, a whole bunch of them. And Nigel Peacock, who's still our webmaster, worked with me on that. Sue Nethercutt, who is running our chat room and does our newsletter and all kinds of other things with us. Was running her own forums on CompuServe and was helping us out. You know, I made a lot of good friends back then who still are friends. Dave DeBronkart, a bunch of great people. Brad Walrod. We even collaborated on books together. And one of the things I know for a fact is that if you try to call CompuServe and cancel your service, the people were incentivized to try to talk you out of it. And so I'm guessing that this guy, the Comcast business model, is that the guys who take the cancel calls, they get either a bonus. I'm just guessing. They either get a bonus if they talk people out of canceling, or they lose pay if the people actually do cancel. Or maybe just brownie points. Who knows? But here he is again.
Yes?
Is
that something you can do?
Greatly from transferring your service to your new address.
Is that something you can do? I mean, this is disconnect us by phone.
And just goes on and
yes or no.
On and on. So I've had this experience. Ryan Block has had this experience. And I'm guessing this isn't the first time in his life. Have you had this experience? You want to share a horror story of corporate bureaucracy run amok?
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
If so, give us a call. Maybe there's some interesting stories out there. I'm guessing there are. And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. We really, I mean, this is a true story. What we did when we lived in Vermont, it was nuts. I mean, it was just nuts. I had this cell phone, and I'd had cell phones before. I had a cell phone in Atlanta, and I, in fact, I got a brick phone, and then I got a bag phone, that sat in the back of my car, and I had this Italian sports car, and it was one of the early computers, and the bag phone sat on top of the computer, and whenever I used the phone, the car would stop. I mean, even on the freeway, like the engine would just stop. And so we took a while to discover what that was. It was that the car's computer was mounted underneath the little platform behind the front seats, which is where I had the bag phone. And I was probably irradiating my entire body. And I still have a burn mark on my thumb from the irradiation from the analog phone that I had. So I've been with cell phones forever. It's, you know, if anybody's a candidate for brain cancer, I'm probably at the top of the list. But anyhow, the point is that when the industry matured by the late 90s, we moved to Vermont in 96 or 97. I think it was 97 that we sold our ad agency in Atlanta and retired to Vermont. We did a 7-year buyout with our employees. And so it was probably 97. It might have been 98. But at that point, the cell phone companies were getting larger and more mature, and they were starting to act like monopolies. Now, you know, there is a way to deal with this, and the Europeans have figured this out. The Canadians have figured this out. And that is that you say, okay, you've got a cell tower. You make money off that cell tower. You make money by charging your customers for access to it. You can also make money by charging other carriers access to your cell tower. You have to provide, if Sovereignet or Acme Widget or Tom Hartman wants to go into the cell phone business, you have to provide access to your tower to his phones. You can charge him, his company, for the access to the tower, but it has to reflect the actual cost of the tower plus a reasonable profit, a not unreasonable profit. In other words, you're not keeping out competitors. And then you have to compete with these people. And in Vermont, when I lived in Vermont, they actually did this with the telephone companies. We had Verizon, I believe, owned the copper coming into our house, but we had a company that was just a couple blocks away from us, Sovereignet, as in the sovereign nation of Vermont used to be, Sovereign Vermont, Sovereignet, was our phone company. And it was flat rate, $25 a month. You can call anywhere you want in the country. It was great service. The repair guy lived three blocks away from me, and I had his phone number. It was great. If I needed to, when we had to have second and third lines installed, we had to call and pay Comcast to come out and put the copper in. And it was their copper, and Sovereignet had to pay them a fee, but they had access to it. This is how it works in most countries. When we had a caller from Canada yesterday who runs an ISP, and he was saying, okay, if somebody's got cable in their house or they've got telephone lines coming into their house, they got copper coming into their house or fiber coming into their house, I can provide you, if you're in your house, I can provide you with internet service. And I compete with those companies, even though I go over their wires. And this is why in Europe there's competition. This is why in Canada there's competition. And in the United States, there's no competition. We'll be back with one more very short rant on my part and your calls on this topic right after this. Interesting. So there's this gets us to this issue of, there's the issue of monopoly is tied up in this. The issue of common carrier. Shane was just telling me he lives in Maryland. There's one company that owns the power line that comes into his house. But he can choose from several different companies to provide him with electricity. Now, what that means is that the company who owns the wire that comes into his house and the transmission and the transformer at the pole and probably most of the wire going back to a local substation, that company is charging the company that is supplying Shane with his electricity for transport of that. But they're because they clearly the state has defined them as a common carrier, they can charge the actual cost plus a reasonable profit, but not an unreasonable profit. Not so much that they can keep competitors out. When we were living, now I don't know if this is the case in Portland. When we were living in Portland, we had one company. There was PG&E. It was a division of PG&E, and it was It was spun off the old Enron, and I believe that they had a monopoly in the marketplace. Now they said that, you know, for an extra 5%, you can get just our green electricity, and we'll just funnel a green light. But it was all within that one company. So there wasn't common carrier status, or at least common carrier that says you have to allow competitors in Oregon. But this this experience that Ryan Block had and that so many of us had speaks to, number one, the fact that corporate bureaucrats are not answerable to anybody, whereas government bureaucrats are actually answerable to we the people. And everybody on the right trashes government bureaucrats. Nobody ever wants to talk about corporate bureaucrats. I want to talk about corporate bureaucrats, number one. Number two, when corporations become so large that they basically own the market, they don't give a damn. They don't give a rat's patootie about the customer. I mean, with my Comcast at home, it's like you want to watch a TV show, TV on demand, and you've got to go forward and back through like five menus to get to anything. Why? Because they're using software and technology that they developed 5 years ago. Why haven't they upgraded? Because they don't need to. They've got no competition. I can only get one cable company where I live. Period. That's it. Maybe I could get two. That's not competition. That's Tweedledum, Tweedledee. So, you know, on the other hand, you know, Netflix, Hulu, well, increasingly they're not competition. In fact, I think that Comcast now owns Hulu. So it's like, oh my God. Anyhow, your thoughts and experiences, Matt in St. Louis, Missouri. Hey, Matt, you had a run-in with your cable company?
Yeah, I had the exact same experience with my cable company, Charter Cable, in 2011. I had a bad internet connection at home in which the Charter Cable couldn't really fix. So in the fall of 2011, I decided to cancel my cable over the phone. And within a day or two, a representative showed up at my door to collect my equipment, my cable box, and my remote control. And then very shortly after that, the signal was cut off to my home, and I clearly didn't have cable. Yet, month after month, I received a bill, and it's a substantial bill of $100+ a month. I notified Charter every time, and they just wouldn't let me go. I was captive. I was hostage. And every time I called, they had no record of me canceling it. They had no record of me turning in my equipment. Right. They said that I owed money on the hardware and the past bills. And I had never experienced anything like that. And until you had brought this to light, that other people experienced this, I had never had that.
Your experience is very, very similar to my experience when I lived in Vermont with my cell phone company. And they kept billing me. And I would call them up and say, you know, I don't want this. And they would say, oh, we need to connect you to the disconnect people. And I'm like, I'm already disconnected. Oh, wait, let me put you on hold, and you're going to be with the disconnect people. I'd sit there listening to music on hold for 30, 40 minutes and go to screw it and hang up. And every month I went through this for a couple of months. And finally I just started, like I said, ignoring it. And eventually I found myself in collection, which I also ignored. But that's most people don't have the luxury of being able to ignore collection and have their credit destroyed.
Well, they were threatening me two ways. They started threatening me and said, if I don't pay, they're going to cancel my cable, which was, I tried to explain to them, I canceled my cable. And then they threatened me the other way, that a collection agency will be contacted.
Right. How'd you ultimately resolve it, Matt?
I kept calling, and I actually just with raw communication skills over the phone, trying to reach out to that woman on the phone to get her to understand. And I got a good representative. I was lucky, I guess. I don't know how I would have resolved it otherwise. I had no recourse.
So you finally got a person who cleaned it up for you.
And she was so apologetic. She had no idea. I think it shook her faith in the company in which she worked for, really.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Well, I'm glad you had a good resolution, Matt. I gave up long before that. Probably had I persisted. There's probably at every company, you know, like one out of 30 of them, they're... in fact, Robert used to work for one of these companies, for a cable company. You want to share your experience, Robert, in Decula, Georgia. Am I saying that right?
Yeah, Tom, thanks. Now, I used to work for a large nationwide cable company, not Comcast or Charter, but the department you're talking about is called retention.
Oh, really?
And what happens is you get, first off, I'd say about half of the people there, they get shuffled there after they're in a department that's no longer viable and gets shut down.
Right.
So it's either go there or go home. But they have a loss percentage per account that they're held accountable for. So you have this quota, you have this percentage of your calls, let's say it was between $14 and $18 per account that you can lose. You can talk them down, hey, I'll give you $10 a month, I'll give you HBO for 6 months, whatever. But after about 60 to 90 days, if you're exceeding that loss amount, you're out, you're gone.
You lose your job.
They had the,
so this guy that Ryan Block was talking to was fighting for his job.
Absolutely. The retention or salvage department, they had the highest attrition in the company. It was an absolute revolving door.
Wow.
Stress like you would not believe. But they have a cap, and they just average it out on the calls that you take. Now, I listened to that call yesterday. It was beyond ridiculous. I listened to it on Huffington,
yeah.
And he would have been fired with the company I was working with. But
because he just went over the top.
Yeah, his desperation is born out of that cap. I mean, they hold you to it.
Right.
10 cents away from it, you're out.
Yeah, this guy was desperate for his job. Very interesting. Robert, thank you for sharing your experience with us. We will be back. Of course, the caveat, I can't vouch for anybody who calls in's story, but I suspect that there's a million stories in the Naked City, and we're wearing clothes today. There's probably 5 million stories. We'll be back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
You have an experience trying to cancel.
Can you disconnect us by phone? Are you capable in your system of disconnecting our service? Yes or no?
Welcome back, Tom. I've been here with you and Grant in Tulsa, Oklahoma. You've had an experience of customer service with a giant corporation?
Well, sort of customer service. What happened is Target puts out these things like a debit card. Are you experienced in their way of doing business?
No, I think I've only been in a Target store once in my life, and that was when we lived back in Atlanta, as I recall.
Yeah,
it's been a long time.
We don't shop there that much either. Let me tell you what happened briefly. First of all, I'm a truck driver, and I have a account that's separate from my personal money, as you probably understand why.
Sure.
And my wife went to Target, and she bought patio chairs, and she used the corporate account. And I wish she hadn't have done that, because that creates a nightmare, as you know why. Well, they
right, you got to account for it to the IRS and all that kind of stuff, yeah. You got to clean up your books.
You sure do. It's a mess trying to get that straightened out and explain what a truck driver's doing buying 8 patio chairs.
Right.
But anyway, they offered her a debit card, and she didn't understand what it was. And what they do is they give you a card that looks like a credit card, but the agreement is that they draw money when you use that card out of your personal account.
Right.
It's not like a Sears card.
You mean out of your personal checking account?
Yes, sir.
Wow.
Whatever card you scan in the machine is the one that it records. And then when you go in there to buy paper towels, if you use that Target card, it takes it directly out of your bank account.
Wow.
And you can imagine, no way is that going to happen. Well, anyway, I went through this whole deal trying to get that thing canceled, and I ended up having my dad as a lawyer having him send him a letter to get the thing closed. What I did is I would go in there to buy a roll of paper towels after my wife called them and I called them. Everybody called them to get them to close it. Yeah, they closed. I'd go in and buy a roll of paper towels, and I would scan that card, and they'd tell me it was still active.
Wow.
And it went on for months and months and months. Finally, I had to have my dad send him a letter saying that if you don't close it, we're going to sue you for damages. Blah, blah, blah. But most people don't have access to a lawyer.
Right, like or they don't have the funds to hire a lawyer. I mean, if you're talking about a couple $100 a month bill and you go to a lawyer and they're gonna say, it's going to cost us at least $1,000 for my time and for the filing fees just to drop something on one of these big companies' doorstep. And then they've got a whole team of lawyers who are on salary, and their whole job is to fight us. It could cost us, $10,000, $20,000, $30,000 to fight this $500 bill. Do you really want to do that?
Yeah, and the only alternative is close the account that I've had open for 20 years.
Right.
To stop it. And I didn't want to do that because customers I deal with are used to, they don't want changes either.
Right.
Because then they think you're trying to do funny money or...
Or there's something wrong with your credit.
Up.
Yeah.
Right. And you're not paying your bills or...
Yeah.
Or... You know what I'm saying.
I absolutely do. And not everybody has a lawyer for a dad, and that's, again, there's a great book back when we owned a business the travel agency in Atlanta. And then I also used during the ad agency. There was a great book. It was called something like Threatening Lawyer Letters. And it was basically all these boilerplate letters that you could send to people that, that had these draconian threats that had been written by lawyers and were, and that you could just type in as if you were not, a, not pretending to be corporate counsel, but just, you know, sounding so official and so lawyer-like. And, particularly for collections, because a lot of companies were, you know, hiring us, having us perform services and then paying us net 90, which means that they're, you know, we're billing net 30 and they're basically, you know, doing, using us as a 60-day revolving line of credit. And so I would go after them on that. But anyhow, it's, there's a lot of ways to do this. Eleanor in South San Francisco, California, you got a story you want to share.
Yes, Tom. Tom, I love you. And I just discovered you on the free speech thing because I got a Roku. And I am loving watching you and listening to you.
Great. Well, thank you.
But I wanted to let you know that my story is very simple. I'll make it short. My dad was ill, and he passed away back in 2008. And during the going through these processes that he had to go through at, toward the end of his life, he was worrying. He told me, I don't have any money, and I'm afraid that none of my bills are going to be paid. So in order to make him feel better, to allay his fears, I went right in front of him. I called Verizon and said I would like to pay my father's telephone bill. So that, and he was listening, and I paid it over the phone with my debit card. And I did it that month, and I automatically did it the next month, too, just to keep things even for him.
Right.
Well, when he passed away, I had already paid the previous month's bill. The next month's bill.
Right.
Prior to his death. So I called them, and I said, I need to do two things. I need to cancel his account, and I need to get a refund for the last payment I made because it covered the following month.
Right, and he's not here anymore.
So, and he's no longer, you know, he passed away, blah, 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 blah. I gave the whole, I laid it out quite easily for this young lady to handle, and her response to me was, first she said, I'm sorry for your loss, and then she said, but, you know, I can't really close the account. I have to have the account owner close the account for, you know, you can't do it because you're not the account.
We have to get a psychic on the line to talk to your dead dad. Is that?
Well, that was it. I said, okay. I said, maybe you didn't hear me. I said, my father is no longer here. My father died in April. Yeah, I understand, she said, but you have to understand, you know, we have a procedure. I said, he's dead. He can't close his account, and I'm doing it on his behalf, and you took the money out of my checking account.
Right.
And this went back and forth, Tom. I must have called, I don't know, 3 or 4 times. I get different people. I got the same response for, I think, 2 or 3.
So, in essence, she was saying, not only are we not going to refund your last month, we're not even going to cancel the account. We're going to continue billing you.
Do it. Exactly. And I kept getting bills. I think I got bills 6 months into after that. But I never got my money back.
Wow.
And I never, and I just stopped calling him. And they kept sending me bills. And I did get a notice for a collection. My sister said, oh, there's some mail here. They're collecting. We're in collections for this phone bill. I said, I don't know what to do. I said, I don't have any idea what to do about it. I have no power beyond this lifetime. So I can't do anything about this. So just leave it. And I, same with me. I got, my credit was ruined. My father, posthumously, his credit was ruined.
Right.
So, you know, it just, when we get involved with these big companies, there's just no out with them. And it just takes me back to, I don't know if you may remember, that show, A Laugh In, where Lily Tomlin used to do the phone lady.
Yes.
Phone company. And she said, we can do that because we're the phone company. And that's what we're living in now.
Yeah. Yeah, it's absolutely right. And the phone company was a monopoly back then. And when Lily Tomlin was doing that, everybody understood. Everybody identified because they dealt with a monopoly. And that's why Nixon and Johnson and Carter, who am I missing? Ford. Nixon, Jerry Ford, Jimmy, Lyndon Johnson. No, Johnson wasn't in there. It was Nixon, Jerry Ford, and Jimmy Carter. That's how long it took to break up AT&T. It was three presidential administrations. But we finally said, enough already, and Lily Tomlin had to retire the routine. And Lily is a wonderful person and a friend, by the way. She and I did a fundraiser together for Progressive Democrats of America last summer, pdamerica.org, and she's just great. And she's still out there just knocking them dead. Eleanor, thank you for sharing your story. I'm sorry to hear about the loss of your father, but you've added to our list here of amazing stories of corporate bureaucracies and why we need to do something about them. Thank you, Eleanor. And thank you so much for watching us on your Roku box on Free Speech TV. Mark in Tucker, Georgia, listening on Sirius XM. Hey, Mark, what's up?
Hey, Tom, how are you? I see, you know, Tucker is a suburb of Atlanta, and we miss you around here. Wish you'd come back, but
it's been a lot of years. Thank you, Mark.
Well, you know, the joke now is that 1,000,000 to 1 odds happen 6 times a day in Atlanta. But anyway, the reason I'm calling is I am rereading Unequal Protection, and
I'm just wondering why.
Well, it's a brilliant book, brilliantly laid out, and I'm just wondering, you know. It seems to me you have laid out a perfect foundational case that some attorney could take, you know, right back at the Supreme Court and say, look, you know, there never was a Supreme Court decision that says that corporations are people. It does not exist. It's a headnote, but a headnote is not a decision. So, you know, is there some way to unravel this or stuff this genie back in the bottle?
Not without either congressional action. Congress under Article 3, Section 2 could literally pass a law saying that the Supreme Court may no longer say that corporations are persons and that money is speech. They could no longer say that. And that Article 3, Section 2 says that the Supreme Court must operate under exceptions defined by Congress and under regulations defined by Congress. I doubt that's going to happen. The other way is to amend the Constitution for we the people to say the Supreme Court can't say this anymore. And that's what MoveToAmend.org is trying to do. And you'll find that as you get toward the end of the book, because the Supreme Court, even though the first time in 1886 in Santa Clara County versus Southern Pacific Railroad did not say that corporations are persons. In fact, if you read the end of the decision, they said the opposite. They upheld that. They just threw it back to the California Supreme Court. But the next time, which was about 12 years later, that the Supreme Court cited the headnote, that then became a precedential case. That became precedent in which the Supreme Court was asserting that corporations are persons. And they have done that over 30 times in the years since then, most recently it wasn't McCutcheon, Hobby Lobby. They just said corporations are persons. So we need to amend the Constitution. Mark, thanks for the call. We'll be back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
We apparently have some hysterical experiences with some of these companies on the line. We'll be back with your calls after this. Welcome back. David, watching Free Speech TV on the Dish Network in Waterford, Michigan. Hey, David, you've got a Comcast story?
Yeah, I moved in with my grandma a little while ago, and she had Comcast cable, and I wanted to get internet, and they were advertising $30 a month, and that goes up to like $48. And so I got internet with them, and then I saw my grandma's bill. She was getting billed $120 a month for standard definition cable, basic package.
Wow.
So I was like, this is messed up. Let's just get satellite. So when we dropped the cable, they took my bill, and they're like, since you're not getting cable anymore with us, we got to put your internet bill up. And they put it up to like $90. So I called I went online and called a Better Business Bureau.
Right.
And they straightened things out for me.
Really?
Yeah.
That's great.
Well, they had Comcast call me,
mm-hmm.
and they talked to me, and then they're like, oh, there's nothing we can do. Then, like, 2 weeks later, they call me back, and they're like, all right, we're going to give it to you for $20 a month.
Right.
For a little while, for a year.
Right.
And then we'll change it.
And then we'll jack the price up on you. Yeah. But at least the Better Business Bureau, the threat of they're not having because the Better Business Bureau's report customer complaints, and if the customer is still unhappy, that goes on file as a customer complaint. And some people actually check Better Business Bureau ratings when they do business with companies, so it's sort of a check and balance. And
they always mess with elderly. Like, my grandma's old, she's a widow,
yeah,
and you know, AOL was billing her for high speed. She didn't even have a computer.
Wow.
You know, they do things like this, all these corporations.
Yeah, yeah. That's been my experience, too. So thank you, David, for the call. Oneida in Montclair, New Jersey, you have a story with your internet company.
I am still in Maine.
In Maine, okay.
You've got me wrong.
We got to change that in the database. Danielle will flag it right now.
Okay. That lady that called you about the whatever she said was being done to her, she's right. Not being able to stop somebody because they died, that happened to me also.
Oh, my.
But I called you mostly on this corporation thing.
Mm-hmm.
Dish, I've had Dish for a long time, but then I sold my home and moved into a senior citizen community, and they had Dish installed in every little condominium home,
mm-hmm.
and I had to take it, which is okay, but after less than a year, I had to leave there because of a health problem and move to Maine to live with my daughter, but she had Direct, and they billed me $274 for breaking my contract. And I sent him a letter and I explained. I left because I was sick and she has something else and I can't make her change it. They said they don't care. Well, this went on for a little while. I called the consumer division of the consumer corporation or something or other in the state of Missouri.
Right.
And I sent them the proof and the letter. And within 10, 15 days, I had a letter of apology from Dish.
Oh, that's great. So you used the power of government against a monopolistic corporation.
Yes.
Good on you, Oneida. That's a story with a nice outcome. Thank you for calling. We'll be back. Welcome back. 10 minutes before the hour. Tom Harbin here with you. Norman in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Hey, Norman, you have a story about AT&T?
Yes, Tom. Good afternoon. I have a similar story with them. I had opened a restaurant, and there was AT&T was supposed to install a phone at the business. And when they came, they should have notified me when they were supposed to install the services. They didn't. They went and they installed it, but they installed it at the wrong business place. So.
Yeah.
By the time I called them, I found out about it. I called them. A couple of days appointments. Like, the restaurant's supposed to be open the Monday. Everything got smashed up the Sunday because we were doing cleaning all that. My son got killed in the restaurant, so we just, you know, got rid of it and whatever. By the time I got around back to it, you know, I got bankrupt and all that because of medical bills and all that. I had to sell everything just to pay that. But what happened was they kept billing me. And I told them, you installed the phone at the wrong place. I never received services for one day. Oh, that I have into the system, ABC, and you got to pay. So the only thing I could do was I told them, but you got it listed, the bill is owed upon the corporation. He said, oh, he said, yes. I said, okay, the corporation is no longer in existence. I've already closed it out. If you got a problem with me not paying it, sue the corporation.
Right. And that's when they back down. Yeah.
Because
that's the benefit of incorporating. Norman, excellent story. Thanks for calling and sharing it. Bill in St. Helens, Oregon, you've got a story?
Yeah, hi, Tom. Just slightly different, but I actually have had my ID stolen 5 times. And each time I handle it the same way. I called the company and I said, I'm so sorry you got scammed, but I says, I have no legal obligation to you. The only one that can create a legal obligation for me is myself, perhaps my wife, and maybe the court. I said, so here's how this is going to go. I'm never going to pay you a penny. I will work with you and attempt to resolve this issue. I said, however, if you harass me, if you turn me over to collections, I says, I will have you charged with harassment. I said, if you turn me over to collections and collections starts dinging my credit, I said, I will take you to court and sue you for defamation. Now, isn't it fascinating, Tom, that 5 for 5, they apologized immediately, said they would take care of business, and wipe the slate clean.
You threatened them with lawsuits. You were the victim of identity theft, apparently.
Yes, and yeah. I said,
and you threatened them with lawsuits, and you knew how to use the correct language that convinced them that you were actually serious.
Oh, I was totally serious. I would have done it, no question.
There you go. Okay, great story, Bill. Thank you for sharing that. Dana in Albuquerque, New Mexico, listening on KABQ. Hey, Dana.
Hi there. Thank you for having me on. My story is about my father also passed away and last May, and I was told that I would need death certificates for everything. So I called Social Security and canceled that, and they said, no problem. No, we don't need a death certificate. I called my dad's pension fund. I canceled that. No problem. It's canceled. Don't need a death certificate. Then I called DISH. Guess who needs a death certificate in order to prove that my father has passed away since my name wasn't on it?
Your TV provider.
So, yeah. Pardon?
Your TV provider. Or his TV provider. That's who needed
it. Yes, his TV. They need a death certificate. Well, my father was an unattended death, and even though he was 93 and just passed away, it took 6 weeks for me to get a death certificate. So meanwhile, I was being billed by DISH, and I rolled over. I didn't fight it, I guess. But I finally sent them the death certificate. Didn't hear anything about cancellation. So I finally called last week and said, you know, you have the death certificate. Can we please cancel this now? Well, the name on the death certificate is not the same as the name on his account. He used his nickname as his first name on the account. So that went through a long discussion and everything, and
you're kidding.
I was having to argue with her over that and explaining what a nickname was, and it was based on his last name.
Right.
Then she started saying, well, who's your provider? We could switch this service over to you, and then you won't have to send back equipment or anything.
Right.
So, you know, if it's not one thing, it's another, and so that was a long, long time, too, and finally, I convinced her. I think I was able to remember the password or whatever on the account that sort of gave me access, and she agreed to cancel it at that point. And so to the best of my knowledge, it is now canceled, except 3 days later. Oh, I did change the address to my address. They let me do that. But 3 days later, I get a letter from them saying, we'd do almost anything to get you back as a customer. So I keep thinking.
Well, you can't blame them for trying that. But, you know, the whole thing of making it so hard for you to cancel things, this is just wrong. Dana, thank you for sharing the story with us. Norma in Montgomery, Alabama, you have a story?
Yes. I had about three things. One, I had OnStar on my truck. I canceled it. 3 years later, they dinged my account through their history of my debit card. And I didn't even know it until I caught it on my statement. But,
that's how I finally got rid of AOL, by the way, back in the late 90s, is I had to call my credit card company and report a fraudulent charge, and I didn't even mention AOL. I just put a fraud alert on my card, so they issued me a whole brand new card. And because I tried to cancel AOL like 5-6 times. They would not take that cancellation.
They kept my information for 3 years, though, without my permission. But what I was going to say is that here in Alabama, there is no radio station that carries free speech. So and you can't get it through a cable company. So you're limited to a choice of the two satellites.
Right,
I had DISH, got into a fight with them over football I didn't order, and switched to Direct. Uh-huh. And in October, if I don't have another fight with them, that will double in price from $55 to $110.
Right.
But also here, we've lost another battle with the election yesterday. We pay more power than Mississippi or Georgia, but the point was to find out what the rate was so we could get the dams inspected. But we lost that battle, too.
Wow. So even your electric companies are acting like monopolies and sticking it to the customers. Norma, thank you for calling and sharing your story. It's amazing. It's an epidemic in America of bad service, and it's not because we have bad companies, not because we have bad people, it's because we have a system that actually promotes, since Reaganomics, actually promotes monopoly, and monopoly invariably leads to these kind of abuses.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey, friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters: Identity Guard, Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com, America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com, Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com, providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com, total protection. Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com, your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartmann.com.
You're listening to the Tom Hartmann Program.
And welcome back. Tom Hartmann here with you. And on the line with me, I am pleased to have Mayor Adam O'Neill. He is the white Southern conservative Republican mayor of Belhaven, North Carolina. The website saveourhospital.org. And Mayor O'Neill, welcome to the program.
Tom, nice to be with you. I actually have Bob Zellner with me. He's been on your show before, a civil rights legend. He's with me.
Oh, great. Great. The two of you together. I mean, so what
he's walking with me, and he's 75, and I can barely keep up with him.
So what brings a civil rights icon and a white conservative Republican mayor together?
Health care. I think it's something that Republicans and Democrats, all of us, can work together on. And I hope that through our walk and through our efforts over the next few weeks, we can get Republicans and Democrats to see this health care issue with rural hospitals has to be solved, and it's going to take everybody working together.
Okay, so you are a mayor of a small town in rural North Carolina, and because Pat McCrory and the Republican legislature of North Carolina has decided not to take Medicare expansion money from the federal government, your local hospital went out of business, I understand. In fact, I understand a 48-year-old woman died as a result of this.
That is part of it. North Carolina has turned down Medicaid expansion, which has taken $2 billion out of our health care system, which has an effect. $2 billion has an effect. And but in our situation, we also have a big health care conglomerate that came in and bought our hospital, or basically took it over. Didn't buy it, took it over with $1 million more assets and liabilities. And this nonprofit health care conglomerate, who made $109 million in 2013, decided to close our critical access hospital that lost $1 million.
Wow.
So we weren't even the hospital that lost the most money. We were a third or fourth as far as that goes with their nine hospitals. But this critical access hospital that was put there by the Hill-Burton Act, Republicans and Democrats coming together, Vidant Health decided to close our hospital after a year where they, as a nonprofit, made $109 million.
So you're not only dealing with the lack of funding because Medicaid expansion is not being taken by North Carolina, but you're also dealing with a corporate monolith. These are the problems that came out of in 1982. Basically, Ronald Reagan decided to no longer enforce the Sherman Antitrust Act, and the consequence of that was a decade of mergers and acquisitions and all this M&A frenzy. And now we've got these giant corporations that are big enough to back down governments. I mean, they're backing you down, apparently.
They have terrific political influence, and we're feeling it. These guys, once again, now listen to this. They've got $550 million in the bank in reserves. They made $127 million in 2012. They made $109 in 2013 and are closing a critical access hospital, which means people are having to spend another half an hour on an ambulance to get emergency care. We just had a lady die. Last week, a week ago, we just had a lady die of a heart attack waiting for a helicopter for an hour. In 30 minutes, she could have been at the hands of an emergency room physician with all the tools, all the medicines that they would have. Instead, Vidant closed our critical access hospital, and that lady didn't have as good a chance, and she died as the helicopter was landing. That's why I'm walking, because people are dying. And it's not just Belhaven, it's across this country. More rural hospitals have closed in the last year than the last 15 years. And people need to know this. And we've got to stop this trend.
Right. So we're talking with Mayor Adam O'Neill. He's the Republican mayor of Belhaven, North Carolina. He is marching from Belhaven to Washington, D.C. And, in fact, when he gets to D.C., he's going to be on our program as well. SaveOurHospital.org is the website about that march. His Twitter is Mayor O'Neill, O-N-E-A-L. And this two-week journey started on July 14th, started on day before yesterday. It's a 350-mile walk to Washington, D.C. This is damn hot weather to be, although today we got a little bit of a break, I guess. But
it's 273 miles, 540,000 steps, Tom.
Wow. You've calculated that very carefully.
That's, yes, we have. Bob Zellner, I'm going to start calling him Lightning. He's out in front of me. I'm chasing him the whole way. 75 years old. It's incredible.
That's great. So the two issues, you want to talk to Attorney General Holder about these large hospital corporations.
Well, Tom, we have a Title VI complaint that's been filed against Biden. NAACP has filed the complaint.
Title VI being the anti-discrimination laws.
The effect taking place against African-Americans, Latinos, and poor people with this action that Biden has taken. Biden, you know, the way they made $109 million is due to all the federal money they got. And they can't be taking all that money. This nonprofit can't be making all that money and then being then basically discriminating services against a certain group of people.
Right.
The Title VI complaint is in place, and HHS is now investigating Biden Health. So I want to go talk to Attorney General Eric Holder and give him our side of the story from a real perspective of talking to real people. I've got a picture with me of Portia Gibbs, the lady who passed away, and I think we need to put a face with this issue.
Yeah. Any idea how much the CEO and the senior executives of Vidant Health are making?
There are several executives at Vidant Health that make more money than Belhaven was losing, that our hospital was losing. Wow. They were running our hospital with a manager working a half a day a week, a half a day a week. We have had a business plan done that shows our hospital can not only break even but succeed and be successful with part of the Affordable Care Act called ACO, Accountable Care Organization. Right. This is where the government gives you incentives to help them save money with Medicare. So we've put together a model, the Belhaven model now, where we can show you how to make one of these small hospitals go. The problem is Vidant Health doesn't want us to be successful. We went through mediation with them. They played games with us, started saying things weren't assets, that were assets, delaying information to us, and on, trying to keep us from being successful. Our community wants a fair shot at taking our hospital back. And for a big medical conglomerate to come in, take our hospital, and take something that saves lives and not give the community the full chance to take it back is just wrong, and it's immoral, and we've got a greedy nonprofit here. And the CEO, David Herman, of Vidant Health, makes about $2 million a year. He makes about twice what our hospital lost. Wow. Now, I don't think one man's compensation is worth more than 20,000 people's health care.
Right. Or
that's just me.
Or this one woman's life. Over at the Community Environmental Legal Defense Fund, CELDEF, they have been helping communities like yours, mostly small towns, mostly in coal country or where they're trying to site pig farms or things like this, usually around environmental issues. But these towns are passing laws saying, we don't recognize this corporation as having the rights of a human being, and the rights of our human beings are more important than this corporation. They pass these through the city councils, and they're litigating these things, and sometimes with some success. Are you familiar with Tom Lindsay and CELDEF?
I am not, and I would like to be. I hope you'll give him my number.
I will, and I'll get his information to you as well, because this is another path that you could take. If you've got a city council that will go along with you on passing.
We do. We have a city council that's on board. We need to save lives. We need to keep our emergency room.
Yeah, because this is one way to take on
a hospital, critical access hospital.
Yeah, this is one way to take on a rogue corporation. I mean, it takes a lot of effort, but we got to do this 16 ways to Sunday here. It's because these giant corporations are just coming at us. And they call themselves nonprofits, and then they pay their CEO $2 million a year? Say, what?
It's ridiculous. There should be laws. The IRS should have an interest in Vidant Health. making $109 million over expenses, making $109 million of profit, and closing down a critical, a government-classified critical access hospital.
Right.
While they also have $550 million to bank.
And then doing everything they can to prevent a public entity like your town from, quote, competing with them. Mayor Adam O'Neill, you're a good mayor. You're a good man. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you, Tom.
And I look forward to talking to you when you get to D.C. The website, again, saveourhospital.org. Republican Mayor Adam O'Neill. We'll be back.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You want to have an effect on the ground. It's a consequential effect. Check this thing out. SaveOurHospital.org. And welcome back. 15 minutes past the hour. Jim watching Free Speech TV on DirecTV. You have a bureaucracy story, but it's a government bureaucracy. It's the VA.
It sure is, boy. I have to comment on listening to all of these people. Do you go home at night and take antidepressants and all those things that you hear?
No, you know, the thing that keeps me going, Jim, is that we're here providing a voice to people to say these things. I actually, you know, if I was not on the air, I'd have to take antidepressants. So.
Do you drink?
Well, occasionally.
Okay. Bureaucracy, the VA.
Yeah.
I'm in near Asheville, North Carolina. I live in a small town called Silva, which is about 55 minutes away.
Right.
Asheville VA has been the best voted facility in the U.S. as far as VAs are concerned. And I've had really good care there overall. However, there are bureaucracies that I'm seeing happening recently, and what I suspect is my primary care doctor, and they're the ones that are on the front line.
Right.
You know, with the increase of veterans coming in because of loss of insurance and losing homes and stuff.
Well, also the Iraq and Afghanistan wars, you know, has massively increased the load that the VA is dealing with.
You know, 55% increase of new patients coming in. These primary care docs are in trouble.
Yeah,
and this is one of the best ones. My doctor, normally, I communicate with him on, and I'm a registered nurse, retired. I'm medically savvy, you know, I'm educated in that sense.
Yeah,
I'm savvy, but I communicate with him via email when I'm not there, called secure messaging.
Mm-hmm.
But and usually I would hear from him a couple of days by email. There were non-critical issues. Lately, I think what's happening is that they're probably getting an edict from the VA to work harder and smarter and see more people, because a simple thing like getting a medication change could take 9 or 10 days, and it goes to its nurse, and I hear, I hear from the nurse saying, oh, I'll pass it on, and then 10 days later, meanwhile, I've run out of something. And it's become apparently very difficult. You know, you call the VA, and they do the best that they can. They're very polite.
Yeah.
I had a surgical procedure recently. They're friendly. They're helpful.
Let me just give you two things to think about, Jim. Pardon my interrupting, but we just have 60 seconds left before we hit the break here. I learned recently that being on or being the chairman of the Veterans Committee in both the House and Senate are not particularly jobs that anybody wants, because if you become the head of the banking committee, suddenly the banks give you millions of dollars in campaign contributions. You become the head of the appropriations committee, all the defense contractors give you millions of dollars. You're on defense, you get millions of dollars. So Bernie Sanders is the head in the Senate of the Veterans Committee, and because the Democrats said, okay, let's give it to Bernie, and, you know, because he doesn't care about contributions. And it goes beyond that. You know, the VA does not pass out campaign contributions. So when Bernie and other members of Congress said, you know, the VA needs more money, they need billions of dollars to deal with this influx of veterans from Afghanistan and Iraq that were never accounted for during the Bush years, and the fact that the Vietnam vets are starting to age out and they're getting into their period of maximum sickness, and the fact that we're now recognizing Agent Orange, we need more money. The members of Congress, they were not getting, they're like, we're getting no campaign contributions for this. It's just people. We don't care about people. And so it's not happening. And it's a tragedy. Jim, thank you for the call. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And boy, it's like from bad customer service to a bad corporate, to a corporation run amok that has killed a woman, arguably, and taken down a hospital in a small town. It's like there's a big story here. And the big story is about giant corporations consolidating and basically sitting in marketplaces in ways that distort the marketplaces so badly that there's no longer a free market in pretty much anything in the United States. It's really, really amazing. Gus in Deerfield, Illinois. Hey, Gus, you wanted to weigh in on this.
Good afternoon, Tom.
Hey.
I just want to touch on, I've been listening to you guys for such a long time, and the issues keep coming up and they keep going. And one of the things that is never touched upon, or maybe I just didn't hear it, is what is at the heart of all the issues that we have going on? And that is corruption and greed.
Yeah.
And yet nobody seems to address the real issue, corruption and greed. If we could eliminate the guy, and I know it's hard to do, but if we could eliminate it, most of these issues would go away.
Well, you eliminate the corruption. And you put power back in the hands of the people by taking money out of politics. And, you know, we sort of succeeded in doing this after the Nixon corruption was so broadly exposed in 73 and 74 and the Church Committee hearings with the campaign finance reforms of 74. And then in 76 and 77, a lot of those got knocked down by the Supreme Court in the Buckley case and the First National Bank case. And then, you know, Citizens United and McCutcheon more recently knocked down more of those protections against the influence of big corporate money and billionaire money in our political process. And I would argue that that the Supreme Court has corrupted our system. It has designed a system that is easily corrupted. In fact, in some industries, like the defense industry, for example, and the private prison industry, the best investment you can make right now is not in a new facility, it's not in a new building, it's not in hiring new people, it's not in advertising. The best investment you can make in terms of return on investment is by buying a member of Congress and or multiple members of Congress. Gus, thanks for the call. Let me give you some examples of this. We're supposed to have, you know, remember immigration reform? It passed the Senate and it was going to the House and John Boehner has blocked it in the House. Oh, we're not going to have any immigration reform. So when this thing became a possibility, two companies, Corrections Corporation of America and Geo Group, according to an article published on Alternet by Peter Cervantes Gauci, you can see this over at alternet.org. This reporter, Peter Gauci, just basically lays this stuff out and says, Corrections Corporation of America, CCA, and GEO Group, GEO, waged a sophisticated lobbying effort that helped kill the path to legal status for over 11 million undocumented people in 2013. They also succeeded in securing increased congressional funding to incarcerate those same people in for-profit prisons. These two corporations control, according to this reporter, 80% of the private prison beds, nearly 80% of the private prison beds in the U.S., and they're paid for with government money. We are paying $3 billion a year to these companies for this. Public funding, private profit. CCA and GEO control half of the 34,000 immigrant detention beds in this country, and most of the criminal alien requirement prisons, the CAR prisons, the CAR prisons. Last fall, an effort in the House of Representatives to do away with the requirement, and this is mind-boggling, there is a requirement in law that if GEO Group or CCA build a prison, that the government provide them with enough prisoners that they have a 90% occupancy rate continuously, including immigrants, illegal immigrants. Last fall, he writes, an effort in the House of Representatives to do away with the requirement that the government provide enough prisoners to keep GEO and CCA prisons above 90% capacity was undermined and ultimately defeated by Republicans. And then they talk about this so-called, this most recent immigration reform. It turns out that this most recent immigration reform, while it would provide a path to citizenship for about 7 million of the 11 million people who are in this country without documentation. It would also provide a path, I'm quoting from his article, a path to prison for at least 4.5 million undocumented immigrants. Now, how did that happen? Well, he lays it out. In 2013, these two prison companies divided their key tasks. CCA's lobbying strategy focused on influencing the leadership bodies in both houses, the House and the Senate, lavishly funding the majority Democrats in the Senate and the majority Republicans in the House. Meanwhile, GEO Group set out to undermine the lobbying efforts of pro-immigrant advocacies. They did this by concentrating their influence on two Tea Party-approved Latinos who had no family connections to deportable people. And that was Raul Labrador in the House, Idaho representative, and Marco Rubio in the Senate. And got them to say, oh, yeah, we're in favor of immigration reform. Here's our plan. And it turns out that this plan is going to provide roughly four and a half million undocumented immigrants with a path to a prison bed that GEO Group and CCA will make lots and lots of money on. They're already getting $3 billion of our money every year, according to this reporting. CCA and GEO Group spent $2.95 million lobbying Congress in 2012 and 2013. The Gang of Eight senators who worked out the deal, they gave over $400,000 of that. More than half of it went to just two senators who were the public faces of this immigration reform bill that provides a path to prison for 4.5 million immigrants, Chuck Schumer and Marco Rubio, Democrat or Republican. This corruption that has been made possible, that was legalized by the United States Supreme Court in a series of decisions from 1976 up until most recently the McCutcheon case, this corruption of our Congress by these corporations is a crime against democracy, small d democracy. It's a crime against any kind of functioning political system in our country. It's the reason why we have so many prisoners. We're 5% of the population of the planet we've got, or 4% of the world's population. We have 25% of the world's prisoners. We have more prisoners in America than China does. And they're 1 billion people. We have more prisoners than India with 1 billion people. We have more prisoners than North Korea does. And they're a prison state. Even on a per capita basis, we have more prisoners than North Korea. Why? Because somebody can make a buck off.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
It's time for us to start breaking up these big corporations, to stop the lobbying round, revolving door. Put an end to this stuff. Comcast under attack for bad customer service. Actually, their customer retention department is what they, if you say I want to cancel, that's who you get routed to, apparently. At least according to some of the call, one of the callers in this program worked in such a division. And Ryan Block, sharing his story, and his wife, the writer Veronica Belmont. He is the former editor of the tech site Engadget and a product developer at AOL. And it's quite a phone call. What it highlights, though, is not that Comcast is some big evil company or AT&T or fill in the blank. It's that these very large corporations across America. And we saw the same thing with the rant that I just gave about the CCA and GEO Group, how these private prison companies now are sculpting and shaping the comprehensive immigration reform so that it will guarantee over 4 million prisoners for them, number one. And number two, the mayor who called in earlier, Mayor Adam O'Neill, conservative white Republican mayor of Belhaven, North Carolina, who's, saveourhospital.org, who's saying enough already. And this is pretty grim stuff, what's going on. Because his town is under attack by a hospital corporation, a not-for-profit hospital corporation that pays its CEO $2 million a year. This is crony capitalism writ large. And it's crony capitalism enabled, in fact, I would say caused, by the Supreme Court of the United States coming up with doctrines that have become law that no Congress has ever put forward in the history of this republic. In fact, to the contrary, when Congress acts on corruption of public officials, they try to stop it. The Tillman Act in 1907, the election reforms of 1974, most recently McCain-Feingold. I mean, over and over and over again, Congress has tried to put an end to corruption. And there's a very simple reason for this. Members of Congress, both at the state and federal level, would much rather be legislating or playing golf than having to beg rich people for money. It's real simple. And the Supreme Court says, no, sorry, you've got to beg rich people for money. And you've got to let corporations buy you off, too. And not only has this never been voted into place by any legislature ever anywhere, this is wholly the creation of the United States Supreme Court, in large part since Lewis Powell was put on the court by Richard Nixon in 1972. Not only is that the case, but the only way that we can fix this is by going around the Supreme Court. Which takes us to move to amend, movetoamend.org. If we were to amend the Constitution and say corporations do not have the rights of persons enumerated under the 14th Amendment of the Constitution, and money is not considered to be speech and thus protected by the First Amendment of the Constitution, if we were to do those two things, then Congress would immediately, and I say this from knowing members of Congress, Republicans and Democrats, Congress would immediately say, okay, we don't have to beg for money 6 hours a day anymore. That's what McCain-Feingold was all about. It's why John McCain and Russ Feingold, the most conservative and the most liberal members of the United States Senate, respectively, got together and said, let's pass a damn law. We're sick of this. Maximum $2,200 contribution per year. That's it. We're going to drive down the cost of elections. Now, why is it you don't know about this? Well, could be that your television network, where people get a lot of their news, whether it's cable TV, whether it's CNN or MSNBC or Fox News or ABC, CBS, NBC, they're not going to tell you what I just told you. Because when $1 billion gets spent on a presidential campaign, as was spent in 2012 by the Obama campaign and was spent in 2012 by the Romney campaign, when $2 billion gets dropped, when $5, $6, $7 billion gets dropped nationwide in political campaigns from coast to coast for the House, for the Senate, for state houses, state senates, governors, all of these things, when $5, $6, $7 billion gets spent, where does it get spent? Probably solidly 75 to 80% of it goes to local TV and network television. But specifically local TV. To the television industry. And so they're not going to tell you about this. Some little bit of it goes to radio. It goes mostly to music radio and to sports radio, which is why you will hear about this. And frankly, I've heard Michael Savage go off on these rants. It's been a lot of years. Well, it's been 4 years specifically since we lived in Portland, Oregon. And Louise and I used to take long drives after I got off the air, and we'd drive out to Oregon City. There's a great little pizza place out there that had gluten-free pizza. We'd drive out there for lunch, and all the way there, we'd flip on the radio and listen to Mark Levin or listen to Michael Savage or some other, what are they up to? We're taking the other side. We need to know what's going on. And I think, frankly, Michael Savage does very entertaining talk radio. I think he's a very talented guy, as is Mark Levin, for that matter. Those are the two that we could listen to during the time part that we were driving. And it was amazing to me that they would very often be saying the same things I was saying about the corruption of our public officials. And occasionally they would even tie it back to the Supreme Court. I think this is an issue that is bipartisan. I think this is an issue that transcends politics. It transcends party. It's called corporatism. Benito Mussolini invented a term for the merger of corporations and state. He called it fascism. And now you see, when 70% of the NSA's budget has been outsourced and those private corporations are lobbying Congress for the NSA to do more and more spying, you wonder why? Because there's money in it. This is not about the national security of the United States. I mean, at a thin layer, the icing on top of the cake is the national security, but the cake itself, that's money for contractors. Whether it's war, whether it's national security, whether it's prisons, whether it's drug policy. I mean, you name it. You drill into any of it, whether it's giant corporations, whether it's keeping wages low, whether it's banksterizing, financializing the economy, whatever it may be. When you get right down to the core of it, you find that at the core of it is corporatism, is the doctrine that money is speech and corporations are people. Now, I know that some of my conservative colleagues, I read this, I don't know it for a fact, but I read it in Politico a few months ago, that Limbaugh and Hannity and a couple of these guys were getting literally millions of dollars from Koch brother-connected companies and similar organizations. And, of course, that doesn't happen here. It doesn't happen with a lot of the conservative shows, but some of the big names, they're probably not going to talk about these things. But the ones who are not getting the money, it's like Mark Felt, the number two guy in the FBI, told Bob Woodward when he was operating under the pseudonym of Deep Throat, follow the money. You want to know what's going on in this country? Follow the money. Gary in Madison, Wisconsin, thanks for listening to Mike. You wanted to share a story about trying to quit your phone company or internet company?
Yes, thanks. I had been a 15-year customer of TDS Metrocom for telephone and internet service, and I bought a cell phone and subscribed to that service, so I wanted to reduce it down to so I could maintain landline only. Mm-hmm. I also had a new contract for internet service, so I wanted to eliminate that. I called beginning in May and was surprised to receive a full billing for the month of June, and it was described that I had to pay additional services for an additional month in order for the agreement to be complete to reduce my service.
Mm-hmm.
So I did that and then found that I got a full billing in August and September and even in October. And I kept calling, spoke to several, in fact, one service representative twice. She remembered my voice and my name and the story.
Wow.
And confirmed that I had called. And it was remarkable. And they didn't really reduce my service at all. They charged me full billing. I wasn't using all the service. And yet their only way of dealing with me was to cut the service 100% and to send me out to collections.
Wow.
So, yeah. Oh, and by the way, I had a very similar experience of trying to quit AOL earlier, and I heard that from many, many friends over the years, too.
Oh, quitting AOL was impossible. This was in the late 90s when we moved to Vermont.
Yeah.
And I was no longer running forms for CompuServe, and I just tried to, repeatedly called them, and ultimately the way that I quit AOL was, as I said, I called my credit card company. I said there are fraudulent charges on my card. I think somebody's hacked it, and so they not only issued a new card, but they also forbade anybody. Usually, if you've got a recurring charge, they'll let those roll over even when you get a new card for a year. And they stopped that. They'll do that if you put a fraud alert on it. So that was how I got rid of AOL. Gary, thank you for the call. I'm sorry to hear these stories, but there are so many of them. And again, thank the Supreme Court.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
This is why we need to amend the Constitution so that our legislators can get back to the job of legislating rather than just passing money to corporations. And welcome back. Carol in Frisco, Texas, watching Free Speech TV on DirecTV. Hey, Carol. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Tom. It's a pleasure speaking with you.
Thank you.
I had an issue a few years back when we moved into our present home with AT&T.
Mm-hmm.
And after 4 hours on the phone with customer service, I said, look, just cancel it. Forget it. We'll go another route.
Mm-hmm.
2 days later in the mail, we received a collection notice.
Wow, 2 days?
That not 2 days later, saying we owed them something like $140. And because we were late, they were going to file it with the credit bureau.
Whoa.
And I freaked out. My friend recommended that we email the chairman of the board.
Right.
And I did such.
Right.
And someone called me the next day and through several phone calls took care of everything for me. I have a friend who ran into a similar issue earlier this year with AT&T. I recommended that she email the chairman of the board. We did that. She got a call the next morning through several calls, they took care of it. Though in her situation, she hadn't been told the correct information. It ended up costing her money. Mm. But she was happy to have it finally put behind her. She received collection notices also.
Yeah.
I would recommend to all of your listeners, if they have an issue, do try to see if there is a chairman email. A lot of corporations have them. And in your letter, reference any federal agency or state agency that you feel would want to hear about this. Yeah. I had an insurance issue one time. A friend said, tell them that you're going to write a letter to the Attorney General
right.
and reference not just the state you live in, but the state of their home office.
Right.
I did that, and immediately they settled.
Yeah.
So I would highly recommend
Carol,
wherever they can do that, do it.
What this brings to mind is the era of the kings. You know, it's like we're living 300 years ago when you had to petition the king for clemency or to intervene in things. You couldn't just deal with the normal interface with the people. You had to go directly to the king, and every now and then there's a story about somebody who went directly to the king and didn't get their head chopped off. Instead, they got what they needed, and it's like we have these kingdoms now. These companies are run like kingdoms.
I agree. And the frustration factor is just terrible. That I mean, I feel I'm a good person, but I'm having to resort to threats
right.
to get what's rightfully mine. I'm really not asking for anything extraordinary.
Right. Yeah, just change or cancel my service, or I've moved into a new home, do the right thing, and they won't do that. That's absolutely astounding. Carol, thank you for the call, and thanks for watching Free Speech on DirecTV. I mean, I think we need to start thinking of this in terms of kingdoms, because that's what's going on, is that these corporations are functioning as kingdoms, and when people go to work for them, they have no rights under the Constitution. I mean, that the Supreme Court has decided. You have no rights with regard to your employer outside of specific statutory things. You can't be discriminated against. But basically, in a right to work for less state in particular, no rights. A corporation is a kingdom. It's time to tear down the kingdoms. We'll be back. Welcome back. Tom Harbin here with you. And let's check in with the Talk Radio News Service and find out what's going on. All the news of the day. Ellen Ratner is with us, brought to you by Goats for the Old, goat.com, where you can give a goat to help a returning slave in South Sudan. This is a charity that Ellen herself started and runs. And also by free-don.org, about America's political prisoner, Don Siegelman. Ellen Ratner, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you so much. I'm here at the White House, and the briefing is just finishing here. And it's very interesting. I like to sometimes give the quote of the day, and the quote of the day is by Josh Ernst, the press secretary, saying that Daryl Issa's committee, is throwing out subpoenas like candy on Halloween.
Well, and Daryl Issa has subpoenaed a member of the Bush administration, and he had some questions. The Bush administration held a briefing of some sort, and said, we will answer all your questions. ISIS people showed up, and the White House people stayed there until every question was answered. And ISIS says, I'm not going to show up. I didn't hear any of that stuff. I want it all repeated in front of me for the cameras, right? I mean, isn't that essentially what's going on?
Well, you mean Obama, not Bush. You said Bush.
Did I say Bush? I mixed
okay.
up. Right?
Yes, that's
sorry.
Exactly what's going on. And what's also interesting is that the second, well, really the what's called the ranking member, the Democrat on the committee, is Elijah Cummings from Maryland. And he said, we do not simply haul in one of the president's top advisors at will. There must be a valid reason, a predicate, a justification, some evidence that this official engaged in some kind of inappropriate activity. And he said, I noted he has already issued nearly 100 subpoenas without any debate or vote of this committee. That is more than all three previous chairmen combined in half the time.
Wow. Daryl Issa has run amok. I mean, you know, he's just, he has a history of it.
He certainly does. And, you know, his time as chairman of the committee is going to come to a close at the end of this, because remember, one of the reforms that Newt Gingrich put in was a limit, a term limit to committee chair.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yes.
So Daryl Issa is just going to become a normal member of Congress?
Well, he may
or he'll pop up on some other committee.
But yes. He will not be running that committee anymore.
But they'll make sure that, I mean, he's the richest guy in the House.
He's got a lot of favors. He's sprinkling his money in many directions.
Right. So he's going to pop up as the chairman of probably, this is arguably the most powerful committee in Congress. He'll pop up as the chairman of the second most powerful committee.
Or whatever.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Okay. So a couple other interesting things. The White House today was asked many, many questions about the sanctions on Iran and also the talks. Secretary Kerry is having a meeting today with the White House. He will be here in, he's probably here right now actually having the meeting. And this has to do with that, the talks run out in, I think, 4 days in Vienna. They have made progress. They're trying to, quote-unquote, assess the way forward, says the press secretary. Now, it's interesting that from the podium today, Josh Ernst said that the sanctions have made a difference. They've brought Iran to the table. Trita Parsi, who's a friend of Bob Ney, said that his view of sanctions, and he did this in a CNN op-ed piece, is that it's actually costing the United States between $134 and $175 billion in export revenue to Iran.
Right, and let me convert that into numbers. Trita Parsi says just in 2008, as many as 250,000 jobs, specifically 279,000, were U.S. jobs, were given up because we chose not to export products to Iran.
Exactly.
That's mind-boggling.
It is mind-boggling. And so every time we impose sanctions, we have to understand what it actually does to the U.S. economy.
Right. And China's not recognizing those sanctions.
Looking at in terms of Russia, he was also questioned many times today about Russia and exactly, well, are they going to put on sanctions? Because it looks as if, to you and me and to the average viewer, that if the United States does sanctions, it's going to be alone. I don't think the European Union is going to go along with it.
Right. So this is an example of, we're standing in a circle here with all these countries, and we've got a gun and we've pointed it at our own foot, and we're saying, we will blow up, 100,000 jobs in the United States by refusing to sell anything to Russia if you guys don't do what we want. And they're going, okay. It's like, because we shot ourselves in the foot to the tune of 250,000 jobs with Iran. And, most of the world is not recognizing the Iran sanctions.
Exactly. And I'm not sure that's what brought them to the table at all.
I think what brought them to the table is a desire to be recognized as part of the civilized world.
Right. And also just because maybe there is some morality there. I know we don't think there is, but maybe there is.
Oh, no, there absolutely is. We had a fascinating conversation about this on TV last week. There's a new book that Gareth Porter wrote. And he points out that Iran never had a nuclear program, never wanted to have a nuclear program, still doesn't want to have one. There's a fatwa, a Shia fatwa, that says this is a crime in Islam. There will never be a nuclear program there. But it's like,
we've got to make a big bad wolf.
Exactly. And in fact, it turns out that it was the Rabin administration was the first to say that Iran had a nuclear weapons program. And the reason that they were trying to do that was that they wanted to get the Israeli people behind the idea of negotiating with the PLO. So, in other words, that enemy over there is going to be bad to us if we don't negotiate with this enemy close to us. And it worked.
Right.
It facilitated the negotiations. But then the myth started spreading, and it has hung on to this day.
And what other people don't realize is the Israelis have often had backdoor communications with Iran.
Oh, constantly. Yeah.
Right.
And, well, actually, we have, too. I mean, your employee, Bob Ney, tried to facilitate one of those and ended up in jail, I think, as a consequence.
Went to jail.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, also, the briefing today opened up with the letter to Senator Ron Wyden, which Wyden was given a letter by Treasury Secretary Jack Lew to write about economic patriotism. He said in his letter, the best way to address this situation, that's businesses going offshore, is through business tax reform that lowers corporate tax rates, broadens the tax base, closes loopholes, simplifies the tax system, and Josh Ernst really talked about the loopholes benefiting the very rich in this country.
There you go, as they always do. Ellen Ratner with the Talk Radio News Service. Talk Radio News brought to you by Goats for the Old Goat.com and free-don.org. Ellen, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And I'll see you later today. Have a great afternoon. We will be back with more of the Tom Hartman Program right after this.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com, America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com, Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com, providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com, total protection. Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com, your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartman.com.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Interesting piece over a Talking Points memo that makes a very good point. I saw something to this effect a day or so ago on Democratic Underground as well, and there was an op-ed over at Truthout about the same topic. This is something that is just starting to percolate in the progressive media. And that is the idea that there's a schism happening in the Republican Party that is fascinating and may present a really significant opportunity for the Democratic Party if the Democratic Party is willing to take it. And that has to do with foreign policy. The in essence, the debate between Rand Paul and Rick Perry is a debate that goes back to the Dewey campaign. Actually, it goes back before World War II. Before World War II, somewhere around here, do I have it? I used to have, I know I've got a copy of it over at the TV studio, The Illustrious Dunderheads by Rex Stout. It's not here. Okay, I'm gonna have to get another one or something, or bring the one over from the TV studio, because I can't do it on TV. I can do it on radio. I can just pull a book out and read you quotes. Rex Stout, I used to love to read Nero Wolf novels. You know, these mystery novels, detective novels. And in the 40s, Rex Stout, by the time he died in the 70s or 80s, Rex Stout had published more than 75 million books. He was the world's most, prolific writer, or right up there. And during World War II, he took a year off from writing and became the chairman of the War Writers Board or something like that. There was some committee that Roosevelt put together where he got some real gold star folks to write things that would support our troops in the fight against the Nazis and against the Tojo and the Imperial Japanese Empire. And when the war was over, Rex Stout, looking back at the debate in Congress that led up to the war, compiled a little book with a page or two of introductory op-ed called The Illustrious Dunderheads. And what it is a collection of speeches on the floor of the House and Senate where mostly Republicans mostly Republican legislators, although there were a few Democrats, were on the floor arguing we should never, ever go to war. Mr. Hitler's not all that bad. We just need to suck it up. Why are we talking about going to war? Don't want to do that, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Okay. In fact, I just went over and bought the last copy that I could see online. Pardon my slowing down there, but I was worried. Because I love to read from that book. My father bought me the first copy that I ever had 15, 20 years ago as a birthday present. My father collected Rick Stout's books. He had first edition, in a couple of cases, signed first editions of, I think, pretty much every book that Rick Stout ever wrote when he died. And it was a pretty impressive collection. My dad was a book collector as a hobby. He was also president of the Horatio Alger Society, which collected books by Horatio Alger. The point, though, is that prior to World War II, there was a broad and fairly unanimous consensus in the Republican Party that we should be isolationists, that we shouldn't involve ourselves in the affairs of Europe or South and Central America. We could do it in an exploitative way. We could, we could let our phone company or our fruit companies exploit their people or their workers, but we couldn't. We're not going to fight wars on their behalf or about them or with them or for them. And then World War II happened, and everybody got on board with World War II. And by the way, the debate on the floor of the House was, you had Republicans saying, literally saying, Franklin Roosevelt is going to get us into a war with Germany, and this will be a terrible thing, and it'll suck America dry, and it'll destroy the nation, and there's going to be a false flag operation. And they carried that. I mean, to this day, you will find Republicans who are convinced that Franklin Roosevelt was really the force behind Pearl Harbor. It's the 9/11ification of Pearl Harbor. Or the Gulf of Tonkin occasion of Pearl Harbor. And there's actually a small grain of truth to that, in that Franklin Roosevelt did blockade the Straits of Malacca, which is the waterway off the coast of Indonesia and Malaysia, through which Gulf oil would travel to Japan. And so he blockaded the oil route to Japan, and Japan was heavily dependent upon foreign oil, Middle Eastern oil. Still is. And the Japanese responded to that blockade by bombing Pearl Harbor. And it could have been predicted. I don't think it could have been predicted necessarily that they would have attacked Pearl Harbor, but that they would have done something. But that got us into the war. So then Republicans got with the program. Dewey was still sort of an isolationist. And in fact, although he lost to Truman, but more interesting, and Shane, you've got the Eisenhower commercial for this, vote for peace, vote for Eisenhower. In 1952, the Republicans were still skeptical of war. They were still the party of peace. And here was another Democrat war. So this is what my dad used to refer to the Korean War, the Vietnamese War, which actually started in the 50s with Nixon as vice president. But in any case, Vietnam, Korea, World War II, World War I, he called them Democrat wars because they were all fought by Democratic administrations. And here is the campaign ad that the Republican, Dwight Eisenhower, used in 1952 to, Adlai Stevenson, who was the Republican? I forget who he was running against. But anyhow, he won based on this ad. Listen.
He has met Europe's leaders, has got them working with us. elect the number one man for the number one job of our time. November 4th, vote for peace. Vote for Eisenhower.
A paid film.
A paid film. I always had that at the end of those TV shows. And, you know, in that commercial, you had these, you know, nice pictures of Eisenhower or this elephant going across a cartoon elephant, you know, pounding a drum that had the word peace on it. And Eisenhower said, I'm going to end the Korean War. And he did. He basically said, okay, truce. 36th parallel or whatever it is. You know, we're going to draw a line in the sand and we're going to just stop right here. We're going to stop fighting with you guys. No winners, no losers. Just stop. That's what the American people wanted. And then as the Soviet Union started getting larger and more powerful and Khrushchev started becoming a little more bellicose, the Republican Party kind of united around the idea, as did much of the Democratic Party, of we need to stop being isolationists and we need to start being interventionists. And much of this happened under Vice President Nixon, who was in charge, by and large, of foreign policy inside the White House. Certainly he was in charge of the Cuba desk and the Soviet desk and the Vietnam desk. In 54, we pushed the French to have a final spectacular blowout. Dien Bien Phu was their Waterloo, and the French pulled out, and Nixon put advisors into Vietnam. And so the Republican Party has been very interventionist ever since. Until now, Rand Paul is coming along saying, no, we don't want to do this. Very interesting to watch.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
So the question, what's this going to do to the Republican Party, this spat between Rick Perry and Rand Paul, which is really about foreign policy, and what's it going to do to the Democratic Party? It's the place where despair is not an option, the place where smart people get their news, the Tom Hartman Program, fair and only slightly unbalanced. Rudy in Riverside, Illinois, you have a story about a drug company and a union?
Yes, sir. Great subject, customer service. I'm a carpenter, journeyman, retiree. We have a drug plan through our union. I found on my checking account they debited my account $540 in error, erroneously.
Wow. Who's they?
I called the company up. I told them what happened. And then the so-called customer service person gave me a hard time. He said, have your bank verify it. And I said to him, if your company doesn't know what they did, then you better get a new company. So I told him I would go to the Federal Trade Commission, Better Business Bureau. I even called my senators, congressmen, and my union. So I got the evidence together in about 2 days. By that time, they sent me a check for the amount that they deducted erroneously, $540. Then I called my union, and I told them what happened. The lady in charge of our program, she called that company and got them to assign to me exclusively a person at a high customer service level to handle my account. Any problems I have from now on, I call that person.
This is because your union called them up and kicked their
backwards.
Butts.
What?
This is because your union called them up and kicked their butts?
Well, I kicked their butt when I talked to that fella.
Uh-huh.
And they sent me a check within 2 days for the amount unbeknownst to me. And then I called my union afterwards. And they called them, and they straight, yeah, my union kicked their butt. I told them, I said, you know, you have our account nationally, I think, for the entire Carpenters Union.
Right.
And that's a lot of money.
Uh-huh. Okay. So, yeah, it's another great story. Rudy, thank you for calling and sharing that. Catherine in Monterey, California.
Speakerphone, Tom.
Thank you, Catherine. You wanted to talk about Correction Corporation of America, I believe?
Well, I think it's Prison Corporation of America that Thurgood Marshall Jr. is on the board. And I thought you might be interested in that little factoid.
Who is this?
I know. Thurgood Marshall Jr.
Oh, the son of Thurgood, former Supreme Court Justice, deceased,
yes.
Thurgood.
And you had also included him on the list of people when you gave the list of people who are on the board of the Third Way.
The
Democratic.
Right, the New Dems.
Conservative organization.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I wonder, you know, if his father
and
mother are rolling over in their grave.
Just confirmed that he's on the board of, it's called Correction Corporation of America. They run private
prisons. Okay, it is. Okay. And, you know, there was another, he's also, but his main job is as an attorney for an international lobbying firm called Bingham McCutcheon. And I was unable to find out if Sean McCutcheon of the, you know, recent Supreme Court case was any relation.
Right.
But maybe Mike Papantonio might be able to shed some light on that.
Well, that's an interesting question.
And there was one more point that I wanted to, I ran across in some research on Margaret Thatcher. She started, after she left the office of prime minister, she started this organization called Center for Freedom, the Margaret Thatcher Center for Freedom.
Mm-hmm.
And they are the original donors that created the Heritage Foundation.
Along with Joe Coors and Richard Mellon Scaife and the Koch brothers and Paul Weyrich.
Yeah, right, Paul Weyrich. I was trying to think of his name.
Yeah.
He was kind of the head of it.
Yeah.
But they gave a very sizable donation.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, that's an interesting connection.
Yeah, it is. And they're, you know, I suppose to their credit, the Heritage Foundation is pretty open about, you know, who their funders were, who their founders were. In fact, I think they're proud of it. But it's fascinating stuff, Catherine. Thank you for the call. There's a website called theyrule.net. If you want to know about interlocking boards of directors, it is mind-boggling. You put in a company, put in another company, and theyrule.net will immediately, theyrule, like as in they rule over us, theyrule.net. And you put in a couple of companies, and you will see the connections between the board of directors. It's mind-boggling. Lawrence in Berkeley, California. Hey, Lawrence, what's up?
Yeah, hi, Tom. I'm really glad you've begun talking about corporations as kingdoms, as monarchies, because one of the characteristics of a monarchy is not only do you have a king, but all the workers are peasants.
Yeah, a serfs.
The
yeah.
workers are peons.
Yep.
And that's the reason that the companies are not only corrupt and greedy, but they're also incompetent.
Mm-hmm.
Because what happens is that the people, the workers that you can talk to, that a customer can talk to, who say, hey, your product is not working, they never talk to management. They're peasants.
Right.
And, you know, our pals AOL give me a great example of that. You know, somebody who's talking about them. I do AOL because they allow you to do 300 people in a group email. And I have groups that I have to mail to, Gmail only.
Yeah, I have several friends who are still using AOL for their email. And apparently, they've figured out a way to provide a good product that causes people to stay with them, which is a better business model than refusing to cancel you when you call. Lawrence, thanks for the call. It's great to hear from you. And yes, corporations are kingdoms. This is something that we need to be emphasizing. You know, and this, you know, I've always used that metaphor in the context of unions. Unions are democracies within a kingdom. It's the workers having a democracy within the kingdom of the company. It's a great one.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
And the American Revolution was fought against the idea of kingdom. And here we are again. In the media, 3 hours a day, 5 days a week. Tom Hartman here with you, defending America from the weapons of mass deception. Yeah, we will one up the Bush administration. Robert in Richmond, Virginia. Hey, Robert, what's on your mind?
Hey, Tom. I love your show, and I'm calling to say we're introducing a new comic book for progressive folks.
called Thieves of Eden. It's like, who stole the garden?
Mm-hmm.
Our mission is to save reality from enemies of life.
Well, that's a great idea. Do you have a website for it, Robert?
Yeah, thanks. It's thievesofeden.com.
Okay, B-E-E-S, like the insects of Eden.com. Is it?
No, no, thieves.
Thieves.
Like
oh, T-H-I-E-V-E-S.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we're serious. And we are, you know, identifying enemies of life, and we're putting out some things we think will be interesting for progressives and everyone, called Think Pranks. Is kind of a low-budget alternative to conservative think tanks, and kind of showing the absurdity of how some of the reactionary minds are operating. So, like, our first one is on the site. It's really quite fun. It's for campaign finance issues. It's to free Congress from forced prostitution.
Right. That's a good one. Robert, thank you for the call, and thanks for the heads up. Thieves of Eden. Check it out. Thanks. Good on you. Tammy in Chicora, Pennsylvania. Hey, Tammy, you had a problem with, a collection company?
Well, no. What it was is I'm disabled, and I have a home aide.
Mm-hmm.
And he's paid by state and federal monies. He started working for me when we moved. He came with me from Texas back to Pennsylvania in 07. And the company here, local, that does all the paperwork to make sure I qualify, was who was paying him until January of 13,
mm-hmm.
when they did some law saying that the company that does the qualifying can't do the paying.
Mm-hmm.
So now it's a company in a whole other state. So from January of 13 until just last month, I've been fighting with them because they were subtracting his child support from his check, but it was not making it to Kansas where his child is.
Whoa.
So they had him down as a deadbeat dad. They took his tax return. Finally, we got a hold of our office of our local state representative, and I also had an investigation done through the office of long-term living. Every couple weeks, when he got a paycheck every 2 weeks, I would be on the phone with the payee company saying, you know, why is his child support not making it to Kansas? I'd be on the phone with Kansas saying, they're taking it out of his paycheck.
How did you ultimately resolve this, Tammy?
Finally, after I don't know how many, because I would call, and the person I would call at the finance company was just somebody that could just take notes.
Right.
They could not put me on the phone with somebody else, a supervisor or anything.
Right.
They would say, okay, after a while, they would see that I kept calling. So they said, well, we're going to expedite you. Please hold. Well, all it would do was give me a recording. I left message after message after message. Finally, one of the representatives from the where they take the money out for his child support for the payee company called me, and I'm like, look, I have got investigations going because this is ridiculous.
Right.
This is a year and a half, and they took his income tax. They're going to send the police here and arrest him for being a deadbeat dad. I've got every pay stub showing. Within 2 hours, she called me back.
Oh, that's good. And probably because you mentioned arrest, you mentioned the police, and that got their attention, I would guess.
Well, I didn't mention the police. I mentioned the House of Representatives and the Office of Long-Term Living.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And I did say that if I had to, I would call the police because somebody is taking his money, and it's not getting taken to where it needed to go.
Right, right.
Well, so within 2 hours, she called me back. 19 uncashed child support checks were sitting in the main office of child support in Kansas City, Kansas, because somebody in that finance company put a wrong digit in.
Amazing. Amazing. Tammy, thanks for sharing your story. I'm glad it worked out well for you. Many times they don't, but that's a good one. Glenn in Aurora, Illinois, listening to CPT. Hey, Glenn, what's up?
Hi, Tom. I was reading your book, pretty much the part about the Chicago boys and how they...
The crash of 2016?
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
And how they had this meeting, and they had their first experiment in Chile, where they pretty much took over the government. They slashed government spending, pretty much opened the trade barriers. And what else they do? They privatize government industries.
Right.
And pretty much this is what the Koch brothers' philosophy is.
Yep.
And it's really sad that where we are today, this is what's funded in elections. These are people that are getting into the House and then just saying, where do you think? Really, where we are in society, we should be able to do everything in our power to help these people. And in the beginning part where you were talking about the Chicago boys, you said they were, well, Friedman, this guy Friedman, Milton Friedman.
Milton Friedman was a professor at the University of Chicago. And so this school of economics, metaphorically, came to be referred to as the Chicago School. And although, you know, the entire School of Economics at the University of Chicago is not Friedman-esque, much of it is. And this strain of pseudo-libertarian thinking is referred to as Chicago economics. And the people who are graduates of the school of the University of Chicago and acolytes of Milton Friedman, people like Paul Wolfowitz, for example, are referred to as the Chicago Boys.
Well, what they did in Chile, you can...
They went down to Chile, they went to Russia, they went to the Soviet Union as it was collapsing, and they advised Boris Yeltsin.
They wrecked it for the poor people.
That's right.
And really...
And they created oligarchs.
They created the oligarchies. When people talk about how they don't like government and they don't vote because it's all corrupt, it's all from these guys, the number one, whatever fragment of 1% you want to say in each individual country. They're only looking out for the big money guys. And it's really gotten to a point where you go to look at maybe Bilderberg or one of these secret meeting groups and you're shaking your head and saying, what politicians are here? No, like you were saying maybe 30 minutes ago, these corporations who have these ties, I don't know what the website was called.
TheyRule.net.
TheyRule.net. And it's really just corporate masters. I'm like,
yeah.
Military, none of the spending is going to stop. It's all profit for another guy. It's just, we need education like this show. That's why I've been recommending you to my professor. I even friends too, and I adore your TED talk. It's really great on how we went through two Gilded Ages.
Right.
And you've mentioned the legislation to stop the Gilded Age.
Yeah.
How it's completely one-sided. How politicians have to raise all this money to get elected and then spend all this time when in office to make this money back. And they should be legislating. It's cut and dry, plain and simple. It's really mind-boggling that people just want to troll on Facebook pages and cry it at that. Well, thank you, Tom, for having my call.
You're welcome. Thanks, Glenn. Good rant. Jeff in Denver, Colorado. Hey, Jeff, what's up?
Okay, I'll make this quick. It's four quick anecdotes. First of all, this is good news. There are alternatives to Comcast and Xfinity and so forth. And one in Denver, we've got Forethought.net. I've been using them. They've been far superior in their service.
How do you get their service to your home?
Go to Forethought.net, put in your zip code and your address, and they'll tell you if they can do it.
Oh, okay. But they actually bring copper to your house?
Yes.
Okay.
It's a via DSL. They backbone.
Oh, okay.
So they're
doing
but
it.
Anyway,
they're piggybacking on your old phone lines.
Yes. So one case, I had U.S. West owe me a lot of money. It took them months to pay me. They finally paid me. They immediately wanted the money back, which is strange. And they turned me over to a collections agency, and I talked very nice to the collections person, you know, saying how absurd it was, and I won her over, and she took care of it. Another case, Computer City, which was old Radio Shack Corporation. I believe it was Computer City.
Yeah.
They messed up my brother's computer. He wrote immediately just went – right after he went through the – you know, regular hassles. He wrote a letter to a VP, and they gave him a better computer.
Wow.
And so going up the chain really works. The next one is going to the agencies that regulate things. Brother also bought a car for a very good deal. And while he was cleaning it off, he noticed that all the options were missing. So he went back to the dealer. They said, hey, you got a good deal, you know. We can't include all those options, but that's what it said on the sticker.
Wow.
So he called the dealer licensing board, and they got in the dealer's back, and the dealer ended up fixing his car, and he found them putting a lot of options on other cars where the options weren't on there, even though the sticker said they were.
So this is a scam they'd been doing for a while.
Yeah. So in each case, it's like be nice to the person and go up the chain of command and go to the agencies that regulate.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, you have to realize when you're talking to a representative of a large corporation, I think one of the very first callers that we had in the first hour of this program after we played that clip of Mr. Block, who was Ryan Block, who was having so much trouble canceling his Comcast, was the guy who called in and said, I used to do that for a living. I used to work in one of those companies, and that's actually called the retention office, where you go to cancel, and you lose your job if over a certain percentage of the people who call you, and I think he said 14%, if over a certain percentage of them are successful in canceling, and they have the highest turnover in the company. So you have to realize the person you're dealing with is just a worker bee who's desperately trying to keep their job. And like you say, Jeff, if you can go up the kingdom, or you can go to the regulatory agency, you can have some success. So great stories. Thank you.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
They say Comcast serves up what may be the worst customer service call in history, but really, this is so pervasive. Welcome back. Cindy in Long Beach, California. Hey, Cindy, thanks for watching us online. What's up, Free Speech TV?
Thank you, Tom. I'm bringing big news from the big state of California and a victory for the little people.
Oh, that sounds like good news.
I'm an activist with an all-volunteer organization called MOVI, which is Money Out, Voters In. I called you a few weeks ago about a bill we had sponsored in the California legislature called the Overturn Citizens United Act.
Mm-hmm.
As of July 3rd, the bill had passed both the California Assembly and the Senate. And today, on the governor's website, it has been posted that our bill will become law without the governor's signature. But nonetheless, the Overturned Citizens United Act will be put before the voters of California in November. And I actually have the ballot language if we have the time.
Sure. Go for it.
It says, shall the Congress of the United States propose and the California legislature ratify an amendment or amendments to the United States Constitution to overturn Citizens United, the Federal Elections Commission, and other applicable judicial precedents to allow the full regulation or limitation of campaign contributions and spending to ensure that all citizens, regardless of wealth, may express their views to one another and to make clear that the rights protected by the United States Constitution are the rights of natural persons only.
Wow.
There it
is. And it's the twofer. It's both money is not speech and corporations are not people.
That's right. We think we got a very short, concise, and clear statement for the voters to speak about. Nancy Pelosi, in fact, yesterday upon the SJ Senate judicial resolution going through called it's also to overturn Citizens United going on at the federal level. And now there is a congressional version of that. And she mentioned our effort in the press release.
Oh, that's incredible.
Yeah. So she knows it's going on, and we're kind of all connecting now.
I am going to see her this afternoon. I will if I have an opportunity to speak with her. I mean, I'm just going to be in the same room with a bunch of other people that she's speaking at. But if I have an opportunity to talk to her, I'll ask about that.
That's great. Yes, I think it's all coming together. I think all the dots are being connected. Every single state in the union, in fact, is working on this issue. Every single state, Tom, with the exception of 7. That means 43 states have activity around this issue. It's just that nobody knows that each other exists.
Right.
So we're going to connect the dots. That's great.
And you're working with MoveToAmend.org as part of the coalition, I assume?
Yeah, we're a coalition of people, but we have our own group called Money Out Voters In. But, you know, what we've all decided is we all need to work together and not fight each other,
right,
but let's work together. And I see that happening.
So what's the website for MOVI, Cindy?
It's MoneyOutVotersIn.org.
Okay, so you spell it out, MoneyOutVotersIn.org. Okay.
Right.
That is absolutely spectacular. I'm so glad you're. So Jerry Brown has decided not to sign this. Any
Very
idea why?
Interestingly, yeah, I think he's a little sensitive to the money issue and corporations, but he's not willing to squash it. We actually had Nancy Pelosi call his office and have a personal conversation with him to support it. So he's not killing it, but he didn't actually strike.
Well, not killing it is a big deal. Cindy, thank you very much for the call, and good on you. MoneyOutVotersIn.org. We'll be back. Welcome back, Tom Harbin here with you. And we just had a call from moneyoutvotersin.org pointing out that the ballot issue is going to be on the ballot now in California. It's posted on the governor's website. He's saying this is a ballot initiative, so I don't need to sign it. It's not like legislation. He did sign the legislation 2 weeks ago that called for this at a national level, but now it's actually going to be on the ballot in the state of California as well. So very, very interesting. Very good stuff. Money out, voters in. Kim in New York City. Hey, Kim, what's up?
Hello. I'm talking about Time Warner Cable.
Mm-hmm.
And my mother died about 5 years ago, and I had cleaned out her apartment, and I was trying to cancel her contract with Time Warner. And I lived in another part of New York State, so I took the box. And I called Time Warner, and I said, I did you a favor. I took the box. You can't get into her apartment. Send me an envelope. Mm. And they kept forwarding bills to me. They wouldn't send me an envelope to send back the equipment.
Right.
And I must have gotten 6 months' worth of bills. They said they weren't going to take me to collections. I kept saying, my mother is dead. I am not responsible for her debt. And she doesn't have anything. You know, she doesn't obviously use your service. It finally wound up. I contacted the CEO of Time Warner. I contacted New York City Consumer Affairs. I wrote a letter to the New York Times, and then I got action. They sent me an envelope to send back the box.
Was your letter to the New York Times published?
No, but I always CC the New York Times because I always find that gets results.
Very interesting. So another way to shake the kingdom is to threaten the overlords, to threaten the princelings at the higher levels with shame in the New York Times. Well, that's great.
Well, what
Kim,
bothered me most is I was doing you a favor.
Yeah. You're offering to send them back their equipment. It could be your mother died and their equipment got, you know, shoplifted by whoever cleaned out the apartment. I mean, you know.
I should have just thrown it out.
Yeah. Well, no, I think you did the right thing. It's just amazing, though, that you had to go through all that and spend all that time, and now you can't bill them for your time.
No. It was absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah. We should pass some kind of legislation at a national level that says that when we have to jump through hoops for hour after hour after hour, big companies, whether it's an airline or a cable company or a phone company or a bank or whatever, that we can bill them for our time at least the minimum wage. But, you know, ideally, you know, something that represents actually our individual income, whatever it may be, or even the median income, the national median income, which is around 50 grand a year, that we're going to bill at that. You know, actually, that's the family income. The median individual income is a little less than 30,000. So let's make it that. But whatever it is, anyhow, Kim, thank you for the call. Mike in Chicago. Hey, Mike, what's up?
Well, I got kind of a happy outcome and a somewhat sad outcome on a similar situation to two different restaurants. To give it a real quick background, I ended up traveling to another city with some family. It was a small group. We went to tried this one restaurant. Absolutely fantastic. Came back from that trip, we told people how much good time we had. We ended up going back to the city again with a much larger group, back to the same restaurant. And they are all excited about trying this restaurant. Bad experience.
Mm.
So my sister-in-law goes, well, you know, you should write. You should write them because it was under my name, the reservation and everything. I'm like, nah, you know, just I'm not going to bother. And she goes, no. She kept pounding me to do it. So when I got home, I wrote a letter. Explained to them everything, how great it was the first time and the second time we had brought a larger group. And because they have access to these records, they can see how many people were there. We had close to a dozen people the second time.
Mm-hmm.
So they ended up sending a $100 gift certificate, which was really nice, which means I had to go back to the city again to use it.
Yeah. But that's the thing. I mean, this is a conversation that Louise and I have had many times. I don't like to complain when I don't get what I want in a restaurant or any place else. I just, you know, I it's the introverted part of me, I guess. And Louise is very introverted, but she will complain and she will send food back and she will speak out and she wants to let them know. And it's because she ran businesses. She ran a travel agency. She ran an ad agency. She ran a community for abused kids and among others. And she says, and she has said, there was a particular event. We had a client. It was one of the big national hotel chains. And the vice president of this hotel chain wrote us a letter complaining about our service when we had the ad agency. And it wasn't like, oh, you guys are terrible. It was like, here are the specific problems that I have with what you have done for us up to this point. And if you fix these, we will continue to be your customer. And if you don't, we won't. And it was the most helpful thing that had ever happened to us. And we were able to reorganize our company and change our policies. And Louise constantly reminds me of that. You know, think how much better that complaint made our company. It made us more profitable. It made it possible for us to retire earlier. I mean, you know, because this guy complained. And so I'm not going to deprive this restaurant of the benefit of my input. And I'm just thinking, hey, it's just way too much hassle on my part. And I think 99 out of 100 people don't complain. So people who own businesses learn that, you know, you hear one complaint, you probably got between 10 and you know, 99 other people out there who have the same complaint. So yeah, good on you, Mike, for getting to that. And thanks a lot for the call. Boy, we got a bunch of calls here, but we got less than 30 seconds, exactly 30 seconds. It's not fair to put somebody in the air for 30 seconds. So I will just, you know, wrap the show up here today by pointing out once again, the customer service guy in this call that Mr. Block made, Ryan Block made, is probably the guy who lost his job in this. And this is a guy who is, I mean, these are the worst jobs in the company. This is a guy who's just desperately trying to keep his job. Rather than vilifying the customer service people and rather than being nasty to them when you call, though Ryan Block did a great job of keeping his cool, we need to realize that it's a kingdom. And we need to be working on systemic changes to basically end kingdom in America. Let's see, you know, in the spirit of the American Revolution, we don't want those thinking kings. And start breaking up these companies that Reagan allowed to get so large, and Reagan and every president since him. And you know, take them down. Any of them. Do it. Get out there, get active, tag, you're it. See you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to TomHartman.com.
Hey friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com. America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com. Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com. Providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com, total protection. Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com, your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartman.com.